try your best just to make it quick. Pour my tent to the sick. Cause there must be something she can do. This heart is broken in two. Tell her it's a case of emergency. There's a patient by the name of Gregory. Night nurse, only you alone can quench this thirst. Prescription for me. She's the one, the only remedy. Night nurse, only you alone can quench this thirst.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
Well, you're growing up, Mark. Did you have your disability then?
Yes, I've had it all my life.
Right. And did you go to a mainstream school, or did you go to...
I went to a mainstream school up to the age of 8.
Right.
And then they put me out and put me into a...
So-called special school,
yeah,
were there?
Yeah.
And what kind of school was? What were they teaching? Did they teach you? I mean, like school, did they teach you all like your maths and your English, and were they teaching
me
all
like basic maths, English,
right?
Games. No disability issues at all.
Right, and did you feel that you were being held back a bit? Because obviously you're an intelligent man. You know, I mean, did you take O-levels and things like this?
No.
CSEs?
No. I've got a qualification in City Girls degree.
Right.
numeracy, I've got...
right, numeracy or literacy.
Numeracy.
Yeah. But were they done at college later on?
Yes.
What, in Preston or...?
Lancaster.
In Lancaster. Because you're not from Preston, are you?
No.
Where are you from?
Down London.
Down London?
Chigra.
Right. Well, welcome to Preston anyway. I'm not a Prestonian myself. Are you from Preston?
Yeah, Preston born and bred.
Yeah?
Yeah. Right. Lancashire last through and through.
Right, excellent.
Can I say something about the service user network?
Yes, of course you can, yes.
I say we've got a group that started, it was about 9 months ago, is that right, Mark? And it's a Preston service user network. It's actually called the Preston Face to Face.
Right.
Learning Disability Service User Network. We've just picked out a new name and a logo for the group, haven't we? And this is a group that's open to anybody with a learning disability in the Preston area to come along. It's really informal and really friendly. A chance to meet others with a learning disability,
right,
and find out what's going on for people with learning disabilities in the Preston area.
Right.
And we have a guest speaker every month. We've had guest speakers speaking about accessing leisure facilities and how to do that. We've had Stuart Rutledge coming in to talk about hate crime, who you're interviewing.
Yeah.
We've had somebody from the community nursing team coming in to talk about health.
Was that Bernadette?
Bernadette Oakes.
Oh,
yeah,
spoke
to
earlier,
talk about health.
We
spoke to earlier this morning. And
Andrew Whittaker.
Yeah, Andrew Whittaker, who's the leisure development worker in Preston for learning disabilities. And yeah, it's just really good to come in and get informed about what's happening. We did a lot of work around the general election, didn't we, and making voting more accessible.
Oh, right, yeah, I forgot to ask you about that. I'll come back to that after. But so when they come to the user group, they can express their feelings?
Yeah, definitely.
And
they'll
be expressed in partnership?
Yeah, definitely.
Right?
If they want them to be.
Right.
If anybody's got any issues that they feel, you know, they want to be looked into, myself and the full partnership board reps and take these issues to the partnership board, or to, if like the appropriate, set them to another source, then we'll do that.
Okay.
And it links directly in with the partnership board, so it's a really good group to get involved in, and it's gone from strength to strength over the last 9 months. It's been
excellent.
Really, really good.
But when it comes to voting though, I mean, do you think people with disabilities lose out?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of confusion around voting. I think a lot of people with disabilities don't realise they're eligible to vote,
right,
for a start, which of course they are. You know, if you're over 18, you're eligible. It was thought that a lot of the polling stations weren't very accessible and weren't very helpful.
Right.
And there's the postal vote as well, which can be a bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's before you start on, well, who am I going to vote for?
Yeah.
Who am I going to... So, I think for the first time, each of the three main political parties produced a manifesto in Easy Read,
right,
which is Easy Read is specifically so people with a learning disability can read it
and
find out
what
the party's about.
Explain what Easy Read is. Is it pictures and...
Yeah, Easy Read is basically, it's using large words, large texts and pictures, taking out jargon, using easy words and pictures, so people with a learning disability can read.
Okay.
Read it, that's Easy Read. And I say the three main political parties have all brought out Easy Read manifestos this time for the first time, which is a really positive step forward.
I suppose they want everyone's vote, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is, did you vote at this election?
Yes.
Right, I'm not going to ask you voted for that. But did you find the process quite easy?
I still need work in the polling stations. That would take time, I think.
A lot of people thought, because we're currently gathering feedback to take back to Preston Council so they can use this feedback to improve elections for people with disabilities in the future. But one of the things that was thought, that if people had needed individual help in the polling stations, there wouldn't have been the staff available to do that.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't heard of anyone needing that individual help, but it was thought if they did, then there wouldn't be enough staff to actually give individual attention.
What?
So that's one of the things we've got to feedback.
Yeah. I mean, there's new initiatives coming out all the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We do tend to be a more caring society than we were. I'm not saying that we weren't a long time ago, but, you know, there seems to be more emphasis on care now.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's probably because there's a lot of the population need care.
Probably does the DDA come in as well.
Oh, what's the DDA?
Disability Discrimination Act.
Right, okay.
It's basically an act of parliament that prevents discrimination against, well, disabled people, you know, any minority group really.
Right.
So it just prevents discrimination. Okay, it's, you know, it covers everything. Discrimination in employment, discrimination against women, discrimination
right.
against homosexuals, it covers
right.
across the board.
Okay, I'll have to look that up. Right, okay, just like to say thank you again.
Thank you.
Cheers, Mark.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. It's Monday the 24th
it
of
is.
May, and I'm here with PC Stuart Rutledge.
That's right, yeah.
And we're at the new police station, which is based just off Lancashire Road North.
Yeah, Lancaster Road North.
Road North. But the reason I'm here today is to talk about hate crime.
Yep.
Could you just give an outline of what you do?
Of course I will, yeah.
The role you've got, etc.
Well, Des, you should quite rightly say, my name's Stuart Rutledge, I'm a police officer with the Lancashire Constabulary. I'm based at the new police station on Lancaster Road North in the Diversity Unit. One of my primary roles is dealing with hate crimes and incidents in relation to homophobia, transphobia, disability, race, religion and belief. And I always forget one. I don't think I have, but I'm sure someone will remind me if I have done. Essentially, those are the main areas where we look at hate crime and hate incidents.
Right. I have met you before, and I mentioned homeless people. Does that cover that? Is that covered in your remit?
If they fell within one of those specific criteria, so if they were a homeless person from a specific religious background or race or something like that, then they would be covered. I mean, basically, a hate crime or incident is any incident where the motivation for that crime is a hostility towards a prejudice because of someone's disability, because of the sexual orientation, race, religion or belief. Oh. So that's primarily what they are.
Right. And are those crimes more severe than a normal crime of, say, verbally attacking someone or physically attacking someone?
Well, if what basically hate crime, just an incident, they have, the reason that they're dealt with differently is because the impact that they can have on an individual, because they're being targeted for who they are, because right. it's who they are, can have a much more serious and detrimental effect to them. They can also have a far more reaching, wider impact. So not only family and friends, which obviously a crime against any other person could do as well, mm-hmm. but also the wider community. So, for instance, if there is a particularly severe incident against somebody with a disability or they're being targeted because of the sexual orientation, the rest of that community could be affected by it. So they might become scared about going out. They might right. be worried about it's happened to somebody else because they're disabled or they're gay or bisexual, then it could happen to me. Mm-hmm. And that's why they can we deal with them much differently. Also as well, if hate crimes, they can be punishable more severely through the courts.
Okay.
There is legislation in place that enables that to happen. So for race and religion, there are specific offences. And for disability and sexual orientation, there's a piece of legislation under the Criminal Justice Act, which if you can prove that the offence was motivated by a disability, hostile towards disability or sexual orientation, the courts can levy a much more severe sentence because they recognise the impact that it can have.
Has this got to be proven separately? Because I assume that you, in the first instance, you would prove that the crime, which was maybe a physical attack, and then do you prove that it's...
It's a very good point. Yes, the answer to that question is you do in relation to disability and sexual orientation. So what you would do in those circumstances is say, let's say, for instance, it was a criminal damage. Criminal damage has taken place on someone's side of someone's car, okay?
Right.
What would happen then is, well, an individual thinks, well, actually, I think that that damage has been caused because I'm disabled. Now it's then to try for us to prove that that is the case. That said, if that individual thinks that that crime's or incident's motivated by the disability, or you do, or I do as the investigating right. officer, that is actually all that is required for it to be recorded as such.
So if a third party thinks that
if a third party thinks it should be...
racially or whatever.
Yeah, whatever, then that is sufficient. What we would do then is we would look at investigating that to see if that was the case. Mm-hmm. So that's why, basically, it's straightforward in some senses and quite complicated in the other.
Right.
But as I say, if the person involved, a family member, any third party really, perceives, and that's the word, perceives that it's the motivation is for one of those hatreds, for one of the categories I've said,
right.
that's all that's required.
Okay.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2, the voice of the people.
Criminal Justice Act was in 2003,
right.
and a lot of the racial and racially aggravated stuff's a lot older than that. The specific offences for race and religion, you can have a racially motivated criminal damage, so you don't have to prove that. It's all part and parcel of it, you see. And over a period of time, as with legislation, it evolves, things have kind of been bolted on and bolted on.
Right.
Ideally, we should have a hate crime for all that covers all the areas that's specific and not have all the little different things, because it does make it very complicated for people to understand.
Is that in the process of going ahead? Or
Whether it will, I couldn't say. I mean, it's something that's being looked at, change of government now.
Right.
That said, the Single Equality Bill got passed. There's certain references within there about making legislation tighter and fairer, and you know, bringing a lot of different acts and things together. So that might, in the future, clarify things, but who can say?
Right. Okay. How does one go about reporting these crimes?
Right. Well, one of the major pieces of work that I'm involved with is that we recognise that a lot of hate crimes go unreported. A significant proportion of hate crimes as far as disability and also for sexual orientation, specifically, that's an issue. Anywhere 70% can go unrecorded.
Right.
Now, there are all different kinds of reasons why that's the case. Sometimes it's a lack of confidence in the police, historically, based on history and what people perceive. There's also quite frequently, well, actually it happens that often, the police aren't going to be bothered and aren't going to be interested. It happens that frequently, you know, it can't be that serious. And people's threshold of what they will put up with increases. So a bit of name calling that perhaps you and I wouldn't accept, you know, because someone's had to hear.
They sort of tolerate it.
It's water off a duck's back type scenario. One of the major things in relation to hate crime, that if it does go unreported, those lower level type name calling incidents can become more serious. So the odd throwaway comment becomes a more targeted verbal assault, perhaps with some swearing and stuff like that, a lot more intimidating. Again, if left unchecked, that can easily follow on with that kind of language, with a shove, then more serious assault.
It
escalates, is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important that people record it. Now, because we recognise that not everybody are comfortable in reporting to the police, and certainly quite a few people with learning disabilities, there is a reluctance because of the uniform or the position of authority can be a real barrier, that we're starting to introduce what are known as third-party reporting centres. Now, we've already done some training at Disability Equality Northwest, whereby people who want to report something, but they don't necessarily want to go to the police to do it, they can do it via a third party. And what that does then, they're comfortable. We still get what we want at the end of the day, which is the information. And even if we don't prosecute someone because of that information, so it can be done anonymously, it's still important to us to know what, you know, that things are happening. So a good example of that would be, say for instance, people use a specific shop. An individual goes in, and every time they go in, they get some kind of verbal abuse from the kids outside because they're disabled.
Right.
They don't report it.
Right.
Another person goes along, same thing happens to them, again, they don't report it either. So there's all this sort of thing bubbling away, we don't hear about it. I've already alluded to the fact that things can escalate.
Yeah.
So if left unchecked, that group might get a little bit more bolder, you know, might decide that they might throw something at somebody next time, or just get a little bit more severe in the language used. So if we know about it, even though the person doesn't give the name, but we know at a specific location, maybe at a specific time, a group of individuals, and hopefully we'll get descriptions and stuff like that, are carrying out this form of behaviour, that then informs our neighbourhood policing teams. Right. They can go along, they'll see that shop, well, hold on a minute, I know about half a dozen incidents that have happened in that shop. Then they look like the people who may be involved.
Right.
We can sort of like get names and stuff like that, at least look at identifying possible people, giving them warnings and stuff like that, but at least they'll be on our system.
Right.
And then hopefully we can prevent that, any more incidents happening without the actual individual becoming involved in an investigation, because that obviously can be very traumatic for people.
I can imagine.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling good. Fish. fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean. Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, and a bold world for me. Hands of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
Is there any sort of age relation to this? Are there younger people that sort of commit these crimes? Or?
The demographic, well, it varies. The demographic for sort of like the homophobic abuse and transphobic tends to be sort of like 14 up to 24-ish.
Right.
Slightly more male than female.
Yeah.
A similar demographic for disabled people, but there's also more of a prevalence of women committing offences, and that could be around the caring issue. A lot of disability crimes that potentially go unreported to us are committed by possible carers or so-called friends.
Right, so they actually
people.
Know the people.
So they actually know the people. And one of the issues that we're finding very challenging, is the word I'll use, is in relation to the what I would say is the exploitation of certainly people with learning disabilities, because they're more accepting and tending to be trusting of people.
Yes.
Even though there may be some possible capacity issues as around what they can actually agree to and things like that. Yeah. But people will exploit their circumstances and will exploit those individuals. Now, all those hate crimes and incidents, there's a big debate going on at the moment as to whether they aren't or not. All I would say in relation to those is they should still be reported, and I have a strong belief that they're not, and they still need to be investigated. Right. So what I would say to people is, don't get hung up on whether thinking about, well, does this fit the definition or not?
Yeah.
Should I ring in, shouldn't I? I would go with your gut feeling. If it doesn't feel right, then it probably isn't.
Right.
And I would always ring the police, go to a third-party reporting centre. You can fill out the forms online if you go onto the Lancashire Constabulary website.
Right.
Let us decide, basically. Don't you worry about whether it fits a definition. As right. I say, if it doesn't feel right, it probably isn't.
Well, I could probably imagine that's going to be quite hard for the people in that situation, because they might find it difficult to, one, on their own going, because I would imagine if they went to report it, they'd take the carer with them anyway.
Yeah.
And if it was the carer that they're reporting, then...
Yeah, I mean, that specific situation is a tricky one, but that's why hopefully with the third-party reporting centres and things like that, that gives people at least another option of another set of professionals to do that. The friendship one was more of a... perhaps with a Brent Martin scenario and people like that who were befriended, so-called befriended by people
right.
who essentially exploited them and were obviously exceptionally nasty towards them.
Right.
Now, they weren't caring for him, but those individuals were perceived to be friends by the victim. And it's those kind of scenarios where people have been exploited
right.
that I think it's critical that we try and address. Again, also, one of the other issues that I'm really keen to drum home to people is we often talk about crimes, so I think people would understand, my window gets put through, my car gets damaged, I get assaulted. People can say, they're crimes, and I understand that, we should report them. But the language, again, is something that I'm really keen to make people aware of, that it's not acceptable to use certain words and phrases towards people.
Right.
They're very undermining. They're very insulting. The impact that can have on an individual over a long term can be just as devastating as having your windows put through. It's constant. And I would say that it's just as important that they're reported to us. I mean, I know we might get inundated with lots of reports and things like that, but my chief superintendent, Tim Jakes, has gone on record to say that he quite happily accept an increase in the number of crimes that are reported
right.
and incidents that are reported to us, because he recognises the fact that there is a massive under-reporting
right.
And we need to get a truer picture of what's happening and where it's happening.
Yeah.
Then we can do something about it.
That does seem more psychological than a physical window break.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and a lot of what's termed antisocial behaviour, I would also suggest falls into the category of hate incidents and hate crimes, because generally it's because of someone's difference,
mm-hmm.
whether that be their disability, whether that be the sexual orientation, the race of religion, it is a difference. And I think that's quite key with some of the antisocial behaviour. I mean, the Frankie Pilkington scenario there, they were targeted specifically
right.
because of their learning or the learning disabilities that they had. Now, that obviously had the devastating outcome that had, because it was constant over a period of time. Each incident taken on its own didn't necessarily raise the alarm bells, but when you put them all together, it was sustained. And that's why I understand that some of those were reported, but as professionals, we need to recognise it as well, that those are hate crimes and incidents, and they need to be recorded as such.
Right.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2, the voice of the people.
And you mentioned Disability Equality North West as a third-party reporting centre. Is there any more in Preston?
Yeah, we're doing Disability Equality North West, as you quite rightly mentioned. I've got some training to do at the Centre for Independent Living.
Right. Yeah.
They're coming on board. We're also going to be doing some training with Gateway Housing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also in the process of negotiating some training with Pukar and also Moor Lane, so that hopefully we've covered all the main areas within the city.
Okay, that's mainly disability based, isn't it?
Yeah.
What about ethnic minorities, etc.?
Right, in relation to the ethnic minority ones, certainly all the housing associations are geared up for basically any one of the areas that we spoke about, whether that be disability, sexual orientation, etc. The university, likewise, we're doing some training with them later in the year with a students' union,
right.
for instance, there. And then we're mainly more concentrating on more of a virtual push in relation to using the online reporting system that we've got on the website. Okay. So we're hopefully going to publicise that, or we will be publicising that a lot more.
Right. Do you have any sort of percentages or figures that have been reported as hate crimes or incidents? Right.
I mean, it's one of the problems that we've got is we don't have a true picture. So if we take, for instance, the disability hate crimes, we could get, I don't know, 50, 60 reported in a year maximum. Now, if you know the statistics or the research that you read's right, then that number should be more like 200 or 300.
Right.
And then I suspect we're only, you know, it's only tip of the iceberg stuff. Yeah. So it's very difficult when to quote statistics, because you're only talking about such small amounts.
Yeah.
We are getting more people reporting, which is good. I think there's also training that we've done with officers, because it's important that they recognise as well the difference between what might be someone being exploited or a hate crime. There's quite a big difference there, and it's about making sure that we understand what we're talking about, and also the CPS when it comes to prosecuting, because the difficulty certainly with disability crimes is proving the hatred as opposed to what is often used, vulnerability, and it confuses the issue immensely. A lot, you know, with around definitions and things like that, and it gets quite complex, and you know, we try to make sense of it, so it's difficult. You know, we're asking the public to report. That's why I always say, if it don't feel right, it probably isn't, and that's the mantra I'd use, rather than getting confused with you know, definitions and things like that.
Also, with cybercrime coming on, I know there's quite a lot of cyberbullying. Is any of that racially, or is there hate incidents involved in that?
We've dealt with quite a few, three or four instances now where we've had, and it's we've predominantly used or found this within the school environment, used to bully. We've had a case where a group has been put together on Facebook of a homophobic nature and also a racist nature.
Right.
Now, the youths that were involved with that, the people who set it up, got expelled from the college where it was, and the school respectively. One of them was prosecuted under the Malicious Communications Act, because it is an offence.
Yeah.
And also the others were given warnings as to, you know, it's not acceptable, because quite right, it's people think it's an easy way to, and it is an easy way, let's face it, to have a go at people, but it is still against the law, as it is doing it by mobile phone, by texting, by written communication. It's all covered.
I suppose that has the same psychological effect though anyway, even if it's verbal with someone standing.
I mean, I will perhaps say in some circumstances maybe more so, because that individual quite often will be in the home environment, and to most of us, the safest place you've got is you, within the home, within your room, within the home, and that's your, you know, your safety place, if you like. Now, if that's also breached as well, then, you know, it can be, as I say, quite devastating for individuals to have to put up with that, and there's no basically getting away from it, is there?
No.
So it is, and we would treat those offences quite, you know, seriously as well. So if that's happening with people, then I would say, you know, report those. If you do, at the very least, just get, you know, the administrators to flag them up and get them taken off. I've done that quite a few times, so that's easy, quite easy to do.
Right.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
This is what I would say to people, certainly what we say to young people, and again, this is applicable to anybody really. I think you need to be really careful about your privacy settings when you're using Facebook or Bebo or anything like that, to make sure that only the people that you want to see your information can see it. Because I know a lot of people fall foul sometimes, certainly with Facebook. They'll have the friends of friends setting online, so like you, all right, that's your friend, but they've got 20 million friends of which you don't know. In fact, one of the racist incidents I'm dealing with at the moment has happened because of that.
Right.
So you just need to be really mindful about who you're giving your information to. And I would say always have your privacy settings set at the maximum. Mm-hmm. And then once you know somebody, then obviously you can release information accordingly. But I'd always work on the pretest that, you know, higher to start off with. And then
I totally agree. What other role do you play as a policeman in this community then, as a diversity?
Well, one of the, as I say, we deal with the obviously the hate crimes and incidents, which is probably the less, obviously, although it can be quite rewarding when you get a good result. But we also have a lot of community involvement as well. Okay. So within our department, we've got two link workers, Fatima and Zahid, who do a lot of work with our minority communities, such with the Muslim community, especially with them, because we've the mosques and things that we have, some of the link there. We also try and get involved with events as and when, so carnivals, mailers, the processions, disability. We went to a couple of things at the Plungington centre there. I've done a couple of talks in a couple of care homes for people.
Right.
You know, so you get that. That's more of a
quite nice making stuff. People aware.
And, yeah, and it's about reassuring. And basically, it is about sharing that information and knowing, you know, because sometimes you're often dealing with incidents that are there at the time. You know, we're kind of be reactive, if you like, but we try and be a little bit proactive by getting ourselves out there and, you know, putting ourselves about a little bit and, you know, which we don't do too badly. There's only three of us, but we rely quite heavily on our CBMs and neighbourhood policing teams for that, who are excellent in that kind of work also. We also do a lot of training, hate crime training in schools. We do that in partnership with the...
Is that on their curriculum now?
We tend to go in as part of the PSHE classes.
Which stands for...
Now you're asking me now. it's like RE.
There's
RE in our time.
Religious education.
And citizenship and all that kind of thing. So, and we do that with the Racial Equality Council. We have a good partnership there where we'll go in and we'll talk about all forms of hate crime and hate incidents and essentially talk about a lot of the stuff that we've just discussed.
Okay. On a personal level, I mean, you're sort of similar age, probably younger than me actually, but have you seen these sort of things on the increase?
I think I don't know so much as on the increase, I think we're better at recognising it now.
Yeah.
We're better at recording it. We're getting better at dealing with it, for sure. There's a lot of work going on at the moment, certainly with disability, hate crimes, because we were not very good at treating victims that well, I have to say. You know, anyone with a learning difficulty, when I joined the job, and I'm just over 20 years ago, you know, if it was a capacity issue, they're not a credible witness.
Yeah.
They can't possibly give evidence. Mm-hmm. And that basically was the end of the job.
Yeah.
Now, thankfully, we've moved on and there are special measures that we can put in place now for victims, whether that be the use of intermediaries to help them give evidence, video links in court. There's lots of things that can be done now to assist people to give the evidence. And a lot of the time it's like when we use an interpreter with someone who can't speak the language, it's just a different way of getting the information.
Yeah.
And you know, you need to recognise that, and that's all it is sometimes.
Right.
So yeah, there's been lots of changes. I think we're getting better. There's still quite a long way to go in some aspects of the work that we're doing, but at least we can see there's a need to improve. And I think if you can at least recognise that, you're over halfway there.
It's getting better all the time. I used to get mad at my school. The teachers that taught me weren't cool. Hiding the end in the sand. better all the time. To be cruel to my woman, I beat her and kept her apart from the things that she loved. Man, I was mean, but I'm changing my scene, and I'm doing the best that I can. I admit it's getting better, a little better.
Carnival, are you going to the carnival?
Yeah, on Sunday it is, and I was just wondering, for fingers crossed for the weather, because last year it was absolutely boiling,
yeah,
and the weather forecast doesn't look that great this time, so I'm not going to jinx it. It's going to be fine.
Okay.
So fingers crossed for that,
right?
And then there's the Mila as well on
the
6th of June, right. So we'll have a stand there promoting our hate crime DVD that we've just produced,
right,
in company with, that was a partnership between Unison, the Race Equality Council and the Constabulary,
right,
that we've used to, again, to promote.
Is that available to organisations?
That is available. We had the launch at Preston North End on the 29th of April to launch the DVD, and that's a training resource, but also to be used to try and raise awareness about hate crime, the strap being, if you experience it, if you witness it, report it.
Right, good, excellent. Okay. Right, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, and I didn't think that was too bad, was it?
It wasn't at all.
Oh, before we go, usually I ask, obviously we incorporate some music in our show. Is there any particular tunes or artists that you particularly like?
Let me see. I'm a big Michael Bublé fan, so if you've got any Michael Bublé, then...
Okay.
Be my guest.
I'll see what I can do.
I can chill out then.
Right, excellent. Okay.
Thank you very much indeed. Right. Cheers, Des. Cheers. Thank you. Time.
Many thanks to Steve O'Brien, Bernadette Oakes, David Wood, Mark O'Farrell, Helen McCondy-Pye. I'll get that name right at some point. And Stuart Rutledge. So until next time, it's goodbye from me. You've been listening to the voice of the people, Preston FM, 103.2.